Gloria Steinem would be proud of us this week, almost as proud as we are of ourselves. Hi, I'm Dan Webster, host of Movies 101. And on this week's show, Mary Pat Toothart, Nathan Weinbender, and I will discuss a trio of movies in which women characters figure prominently. We're talking about Atomic Blonde, which features Charlize Theron as a no-nonsense secret agent. Lady Macbeth, in which newcomer Florence Pugh plays a woman who tires of being literal property. And A Ghost Story, featuring Rooney Mara as the focus of a spirit that doesn't want to let her go. So don't touch that dial, because Movies 101 is coming up next, right here on Spokane Public Radio.
Free your radio and hear Spokane Public Radio wherever you go when you listen live on your mobile phone, tablet, or computer at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Just click on Listen Live, pick your station, and start listening. Tune in anytime for NPR programs, local news, music, public affairs, arts news, and more at KPBX, KSFC, or KPBZ. You can listen to all three live from our website by clicking the blue Listen Live link at the top. Whichever station you choose, SPR travels with you, keeps you company, and keeps you in touch with the world. Visit SpokanePublicRadio.org and listen live.
Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga Law School.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And welcome to Movies 101, your local window on all things cinematic. This is a special show in one basic way. It features three films that boast women at the core of their various plot lines. This, of course, should cheer our resident diva Mary Pat no end. Truth be told, it cheers Nathan and me, too, because we couldn't care less whom a film revolves around, just as long as it does so effectively. First, we have the graphic novel adaptation Atomic Blonde, which stars Charlize Theron. Then we have A Ghost Story, which features Rooney Mara. And finally, we'll discuss Lady Macbeth, which, despite its title, is a distinctly non-Shakespearean production that stars the young English actress Florence Pugh. Let's start with a movie about a blonde who is the exact opposite of a joke. Atomic Blonde is another movie adapted from a graphic novel, which prompted Mary Pat to ask, don't people read actual novels anymore? Good question, MP. Anyway, the source work is a 2012 graphic novel titled The Coldest City. It features a character named Lorraine Broughton, played by Theron, a member of Britain's spy service MI6, who is sent into 1989 Berlin, just before and during the fall of the Berlin Wall. Her task is to investigate the death of a fellow agent and to retrieve an important package before East German and/or Russian authorities can exploit the information it contains. What she discovers is a hornet's nest of intrigue that makes the advice her MI6 handler gave her all the more pertinent: don't trust anybody. And that includes her Berlin contact, David Percival, played by James McAvoy. Directed by David Leitch, a stuntman turned director, whose work includes doing or coordinating fight scenes in such films as The Bourne Legacy, Ninja Assassin, and Zack Snyder's 300, Atomic Blonde may be one of the best graphic novel adaptations ever. And if that sounds like faint praise, it also is a fast-moving, crackerjack action flick, making the supermodel Bill Theron seem even more of a badass than she showed so well in George Miller's Mad Max Fury Road.
And David Leitch, it should be mentioned, who directed Atomic Blonde, also co-directed John Wick, the Keanu Reeves, the cult hit John Wick, although he was uncredited for reasons that I think are related to DGA rules.
I wouldn't even want to mention that because this is so much better than John
Wick. Well, I don't know if it's so much better than John Wick. I liked both John Wick movies, actually. But I would say that I probably did enjoy Atomic Blonde more. I see it getting compared to John Wick a lot, and that's probably because of who directed it. But this movie doesn't have the sort of muscular simplicity of John Wick, which really didn't have much of a plot at all.
No,
it was just Keanu Reeves killing people.
Right.
And this has a lot of plot. The basic beats of it are pretty simple once you boil it down. But, I mean, there are so many supporting characters and so many plates spinning at once that I'll admit – I got lost pretty early on and then just didn't even bother to keep up because I just loved the style and the look of this movie so much that it really didn't seem to matter what it was about.
Just stick with Charlize.
Right?
That's all you have to do with this film, I think.
I think there are three reasons that if we are going to compare it to John Wick, there are three reasons that this movie is better than John Wick. Number one, Charlize Theron. I love Keanu, don't get me wrong, but Keanu's no Charlize Theron. Number two, the soundtrack of this movie. The movie opens with New Order's Blue Monday, so I'm eating out of its hand already. But there's a fight scene in this film, this really great fight scene. It's in the trailer where she's doing hand-to-hand combat with this army of Russian soldiers set to George Michael's Father Figure. I've seen a lot of movies. I never thought I would see something like that. I thought it was great. And three, the pièce de résistance of this whole thing is this stairway fight sequence that's right in the middle of the movie. And it kind of reminded me of those Raid movies where in the first Raid film, you had the guys trying to get down to the bottom floor of an apartment complex. And on each floor, there's a new bad guy for them to fight. And it goes on and on and on. It goes down like four or five flights of stairs. It goes out the door. It goes into the nearby canal. It was such a virtuoso piece of action filmmaking that it was enough to, I think, elevate this movie beyond just being some light summer fun. I have to say, I enjoyed Atomic Blonde all the way through. It doesn't give you much to think about, but it gives you a lot to look at.
I agree totally. The problem is, I'm struggling a little bit with your use of the word enjoy, but enjoyment is an individual
you didn't
or personalized
enjoy this?
Thing. I was entertained by it. To
What's
say
the difference?
I enjoyed it. Well, I'm pretty a nerd to violence, but I thought this movie was really violent. Yeah. Not gratuitously.
It wasn't as violent
so.
As John Wick, though.
Yeah,
I didn't
but
think.
She hasn't seen the John Wick movies.
Oh, okay.
So.
Well, John Wick
I've only
is
seen
more
the,
violent.
The first one. Yeah. So, and it's not necessarily gratuitous, but it is violent right out of the box. Mm-hmm. And so I just want people to be aware of that. There were things that just seemed like the art direction was a little off in terms of what was supposedly the types of vehicles, cars, clothing, et cetera, that existed, especially in Germany in 1989, which is right before the Berlin Wall fell. That pulled me off center a little bit. And Charlize is amazing. So Charlize Theron is amazing in this role. I had a little bit of a problem because she's supposed to be a spy. And who is one of the most striking humans on the planet? She is. And so the good news is at one point they actually refer to that as part of the story, because even when she put on a wig or she tries to disguise herself, she's always just this presence.
Yeah, instead of a blonde model, now she looks like a brunette model.
Right, exactly, right. And with brown eyes.
Right.
You know, so I think if she were going to be convincing as a spy, I think a little bit more makeup, such as she had in Monster, might be more effective. But they do actually play off of that at one point because they address it directly. So I liked that. I really appreciated the fact that she was a strong, no-nonsense character.
Smart, too.
She's living up to what she's told to do in terms of trust no one, which, of course, does affect her relationships and course of dealing with other humans in the world. But I think that's probably how you would have to live. So this is, to me, a summer blockbuster movie, and I'm happy to see a female heroine or protagonist, I should say, in the lead role.
And I also want to defend Charlize Theron as a spy, just the concept of that, because I think it makes sense because she uses her looks as a weapon, really. And I think that that is
as
totally
bait.
Believable.
As 100%. Bait and as a weapon, yep. Yeah, absolutely. This movie, Atomic Blonde, being an adaptation of a graphic novel, is violent. It's of that school of film. You go into it knowing that beforehand. But I have to say, for example, if you want to, you know, let's go back to the John Wick movies. To me, that was just a parade of violence. And after a while, I got very tired of it, just watching Keanu pull out a gun, break somebody's arm, blah, blah, blah. I appreciated that there was more of a plot to Atomic Blonde. And I also appreciated that in other movies in which they've tried to make women seem like they can stand there and fight with a man, this movie did it more authentically. What I mean by that is if you have a woman who's 6 foot tall, which I think Charlize Theron is about that tall, but she's fighting a man who's 50 pounds heavier, that man is going to have an advantage. The fighting style by the director, the stuntman turned director, shows her using feints using intelligence and using jujitsu and all sorts of martial arts techniques rather than just going fist for fist with these guys.
And or gun for gun.
Exactly. And to me, it was authentic in a fantastic way, in a fantasy kind of graphic novel way. And to me, the film worked from beginning to end. And you mentioned some of the songs. I also like the getaway scene in which they have a flock of seagulls, Iran. And then the other scene in which it's
99 Luftballons.
Right.
German.
I just love the use of 80s music, one of the most vibrant era of music in my lifetime. I'm not going to say best, but certainly you can't put down 80s music. You can't say it doesn't add a certain feel to movies, and it certainly added a feel almost ironic to,
well, let's,
to this.
Let's be clear. Charlize Theron is not the only actor in this movie.
No.
And so I'm curious to hear what you think about James McAvoy. I liked his playing a different kind of role. He almost was too smarmy at different points for me, but I appreciated his sort of making that transition away from maybe what he's done in the relative recent past.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen him play dirtbags before, I suppose, but this is a new level of of dirtbag for Mr. McAvoy. I thought he was just fine. I thought that he and Charlize Theron had a good chemistry because they have to be simpatico, but they also have to be somewhat antagonistic, and that that's complicated as the movie's various plot threads unfurl. I also really liked John Goodman and Toby Jones as these sort of intermediary figures. The whole thing is told in flashback, essentially, and the through line really is Jones and Goodman interrogating Charlize Theron. And I thought that they brought a kind of a wry sensibility to it. Basically, you see Lorraine doing all of this outlandish stuff and then smash cut to their disbelieving faces in the interrogation room.
And the whole thing is a setup to a twist upon a twist upon a twist.
And honestly, this plot, you mentioned that there was a plot as opposed to just a series of violent incidents. I didn't much care for the plot here, mainly because I thought it was kind of useless. I mean, it didn't have anything to say about Berlin or that era in particular. Not that I expected it to, but it just seemed a little bit too complicated for its own good.
Well, and I think that's interesting that you say this, and there's probably a generational split here to some extent too, just because I feel as though it was sort of telling a story about what was going on. And I do think during that time period, it was all bets are off during that transition. Mm-hmm. And you got a real sense of that. The other thing is, I like the fact that there wasn't this huge, like, romantic interest. As a matter of fact, the most intense relationship is between Charlize Theron and her French female spy counterpart.
Who was the mummy in the Tom Cruise mummy film and is given a lot more to do here.
Yeah.
I the look of the movie, I mean, it's got this blue, pink, and green palette, but that's nicely contrasted with sort of the industrial gray of Berlin in the 80s. Yeah, this is a lot of fun.
And we're talking about Atomic Blonde. And this is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. But before we go, remember that you can access podcasts and Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at A Ghost Story and Lady Macbeth. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed the Charlize Theron vehicle Atomic Blonde. Let's now move to another couple of films that feature women characters, A Ghost Story and Lady Macbeth. Let's begin by unmasking a few spirits. Rooney Mara is not the main character in David Lowery's original script, which he titled so aptly A Ghost Story. That honor belongs to a spirit, I'm not going to give it away who it is, who finds itself caught in limbo following its sudden death. Though she anchors Lowry's film for fully its first half, Mara departs, returning only in flashback. The spirit then is left to wander, adrift seemingly, until it can make sense of what has happened and maybe why. Lowry's conceit, which has caused more than a bit of consternation for some moviegoers and a number of critics, is to portray the spirit as a traditional ghost, in other words, by draping an actual sheet over an actor. And then that spirit haunts the house, frightening those who live there after Mara's character moves out, and playing with time and relativity, witnessing earlier eras and fates of the people who inhabited them. Buoyed by the stunning cinematography of Andrew Droz Palermo and the music of composer Daniel Harp, A Ghost Story has at least a little in common with the style of Terrence Malick. Some moviegoers may react to what Lowry has created with a smirk and an eye roll. I reacted with a smile and a sense of wonder.
I just have a question. Why don't you want to reveal who the ghost is? Because
I don't know. You know,
it's Casey Affleck. There, spoiled it.
Yeah, right.
Why is that? It's not a spoiler. His name is on the poster. He's in the trailers.
I understand
he's in the first scene of the movie.
But I just think that it's better to go into the film without knowing anything, you know.
Even what actors are in it? You revealed that Rooney Mara was in it. What's
the
big deal?
But she doesn't die.
Anyway, I'm just nitpicking.
She doesn't die.
Well, there's a spoiler right there. Great. There goes the whole ball game. Anyway.
Well, I think that we've set the stage for what's going to happen. And you do discover relatively early on what you think is going on. I think what I appreciated most about this film was it's this languorous, sort of meditative approach to what's happening, not only between this couple who we meet originally, the Rooney Mara and Casey Affleck couple, but also what's happening in this house, in this particular location. And it does take some unexpected turns, and it makes you stop to think about some of these bigger questions. I have to say there was one sequence in this film that happens late in the film where there is probably the world's most obnoxious person holds court at this party. And I am sure that it was purposeful casting. I'm sure it was purposeful. But he's going to explain. He's going to mansplain everything to these women who he's sitting with. And he is gross and affected.
He took
and,
you out of the movie.
Yeah, he did. And I'm still trying to wrap my mind around why that scene was in there, because I think it had a point to make, but at the same time, it just went on. It was endlessly.
I mean, it's the most dialogue in
right.
the movie,
if you,
right?
Yeah. If you met this guy at a party, you would ditch within like 30 seconds. And so simultaneously, I was fascinated and repulsed by this particular scene.
Well, this movie, A Ghost Story, filled me with an almost indescribable sadness. I just found this movie deeply, deeply depressing. And so therefore, I absolutely loved it. I thought this was absolutely terrific. And I think that, as you said, Dan, the conceit, this idea that it's Casey Affleck underneath that sheet, some people are going to scoff at it. There's a scene early on where Rooney Mara, in her fog of depression, eats an entire pie, and we sit there and watch her.
In one single take.
Well, it's in two takes, but they're both about, 3-4 minutes long, because we see her start digging into the pie. Then he cuts and she sits on the ground and she continues to eat the pie. And we watch unblinkingly for about 5 minutes. That almost took me out of the movie because it seemed so showy in its lack of showiness, if that makes sense. But I think Lowry does make up for that, because the scene that follows is this really interesting montage of her moving on with her life now that her husband has died. And I thought what was so great about this was that it is about the vastness of the universe. It's about the mystery of life. What are we all doing here, and what happens to us after we leave? And yet it does feel really intimate. It feels really focused. And I think that Lowry is trying to say something about destiny, this idea that perhaps it exists, perhaps it doesn't. And if it does exist, it's a completely inexplicable, unpredictable kind of thing. And just that notion I found very, very effective. And there's also another character, I guess, of a ghost that is in a neighboring house.
Yes.
And that ghost is one of the most depressing characters I've ever seen.
It is depressing.
I had
at
a kind
the same
of
time,
existential.
It was humorous.
I guess I could see the morbid comedy in it, but I just found it. Casey Affleck, they're communicating and telepathically or something, and Lowry put subtitles on the screen, and Casey Affleck asked the neighbor ghost, what are you doing? And he says, I'm waiting for somebody, but I've been here for so long, I don't remember who I'm waiting for. Mm-hmm. And I just found that so profound and sad, and I loved it so much.
Yeah.
But it's not going to work for everybody.
I really did like a ghost story a lot. And I was ready for it to be too artsy-fartsy.
Same.
You know, and
I went in with a little bit of resistance, I'll admit.
I succumbed to it. Right into it.
Yeah.
Well, and I liked the way Casey Affleck and Rooney Mara worked together, and this is not their first time.
Right, with David Lowery.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they were all in his first film, Ain't Them Body Saints.
Right, and so I think that really made the movie more than contemplative. You did see this relationship. You did see the vibrancy of life.
And the difficulty.
But at the same, yes. And at the same time, the challenges in their relationship.
Right. Yeah, I think this might be my favorite movie of the year so far. It really floored me.
It may be one of mine. And that was a ghost story. Let's close with Lady Macbeth. If a ghost story is only half Rooney Mara, Lady Macbeth is all Florence Pugh. But don't expect her to start spouting Shakespearean verse. William Olroyd's film Lady Macbeth, his first feature, is based on the 1865 novel Lady Macbeth of Matinsk District by Russian writer Nikolai Leskov. Leskov's plot owes more to D.H. Lawrence, specifically Lady Chatterley's lover, and to Gustave Flaubert, specifically Madame Bovary, than to the leading lady of the Scottish play. And Olroyd, working from a script by another first-time feature filmmaker, screenwriter Alice Birch, has shifted the story from Russia to 19th century Northern England. He focuses on Catherine, played by Pugh, the new bride of a landowner, Alexander, who treats his new wife crudely and lovelessly. Alexander's father, Boris, is even worse. Before long, Catherine is looking elsewhere for solace, which connects her with the new groomsman, Sebastian, played by Cosmo Jarvis. But it is Catherine herself whose seemingly mild belligerence masks a far more devious personality that sets Olroyd's dark-themed movie in motion, a progression that includes three murders, including that of a horse, and even an infanticide. For a relative newcomer, Pugh is a real find. Jarvis, too, does a fine job, as does Naomi Aki as Catherine's servant. And if his movie ends somewhat abruptly, not to mention in a way that appears to let evil win, Olroyd displays enough talent to make anyone interested in checking out what he does next.
I was sort of befuddled by this film, but at the same time, I did end up liking it. I mean, to say you like it with its themes would be dark, but I was entertained by this.
I was entertained by it, but didn't enjoy it.
It's like my TV show Snapped, you know? It's like something happens and she just, you know, snaps. But the male characters in this film, at least those who we meet initially, her father-in-law, her husband, the pastor of the congregation where she's supposed to go, were just so off-putting. I was perfectly up for a revenge film. Now, it went in a different direction, yeah. And I think it was maybe the horse's death that pitched me over the edge a little bit. But I really liked the performances here by all of the lead actors. And if you go on the interweb and watch some of their conversations around the movie, you can see who these people actually are. And they deserve major acting chops.
Particularly Naomi Aki is terrific.
Right. They're nothing like the characters they portray in
this
film.
Yeah, and this Florence Pugh, who I've never seen in a film before, I mean, she's completely stunning from the beginning.
She was 19 years old when she took this role.
Wow, I mean, that's really impressive.
Cosmo
Jarvis
is a musician, basically.
Mm-hmm. And you think this is going to be a film about gender inequality, and it is that to an extent, but it really becomes a portrait of sociopathy in the end. And I was reminded, I mean, this story's been around for a long time. It's been filmed before. It's been an opera.
Yeah.
But I was reminded of the films of Michael Haneke, especially in a scene near the end, which just unblinkingly looks on as this horrific act takes place on screen. So you will leave the theater disquieted. If that sounds like your idea of a fun night out at the movies, then I recommend it.
And of course, the most important thing this summer is there's air conditioning at these movie theaters.
Yes, yeah. And it's playing at the Magic Lantern.
Right, right, which has air conditioning also. Mm-hmm. We were talking about Lady Macbeth, and this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinman and Marie Pat Truthart and I discussed Atomic Blonde and A Ghost Story. Let's take this moment to thank Jim Tevenin for both producing and engineering the show. And we thank you to our loyal listeners. And we invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we will again patrol the aisles of local movie houses. Until then, remember, as the character Norma Desmond says in Sunset Boulevard, I am big. It's the pictures that got small. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.